The news industry has been struggling to stay afloat for years, and with the coronavirus pandemic, it may have been dealt a critical blow. In the past month, there's been a flood of layoffs, furloughs, and closures in newsrooms across the U.S. Almost every part of the journalism industry has been affected. Small and large newspapers, digital and print outlets, mainstream and alternative press. For more on this and why it matters now, we're joined by Kristen Hare, a reporter covering local news for Pointer, a nonprofit that trains, covers, and supports journalism around the world, and Victoria Vilk, the program director of digital safety and free expression at the nonprofit PEN America, and who co-authored a report late last year on the decimation of local news. I asked Kristen about the immediate impacts we've been seeing in the journalism world.
All news organizations are in trouble right now, and it looks very bad. My inbox is full every day, every morning when I wake up, and I empty it by the end of the day, and it's mostly tips about layoffs, closures, pay cuts, and furloughs, which have hit the whole news industry. It's worse, I think, for local newspapers. These are places that had pre-existing conditions as they tried for the last decade to move from advertising supported to reader and member subscriber supported. They've been hit the hardest, but you know, Tegna stations around the country have implemented furloughs. And we're even starting to see radio stations around the country where lots of people get their news in the sort of short updates that come with music. They are also being hit really hard right now.
Are there any beats that are particularly affected more than others, or is this across the board?
It's across the board. There are places that are moving their sports reporters over to be covering the coronavirus. I have heard of features reporters, you know, entertainment, music, food, those places getting hit in some places harder than others. But lots of newsrooms, I think, are trying to preserve the boots on the ground, even if that ground is in their homes right now, and keeping as many reporters as possible available to cover this story. Also, this is a story that affects every beat that every journalist covers right, in one way or another. And so we need more than just the number of stories. We need the stories about the restaurant owners and the places and the people that we care about as a community.
Victoria, can you walk us through kind of the state of the news industry before this pandemic? It was not particularly rosy.
No, you know, unfortunately, local journalism has been in decline. And effectively, the business model for for-profit local journalism has collapsed. So watchdog reporting, beat reporting, everyday reporting is costly to produce. Historically, that has been subsidized primarily by ad revenue. But with the rise of the internet and the growth of tech giants like Google and Facebook, they've been siphoning the majority of the ad revenue that used to go to local news outlets away. So in local markets, it's something like 70% of ad revenue now goes to Google and Facebook. And so what's happened is newspapers in particular, as Kristen said, have been hit the hardest. They've lost over $35 billion in ad revenue and nearly 50% of staff in the past 15 years before the pandemic hit. Over 2,000 newspapers closed, over 1,000 more are ghost papers. And the reason that matters is that if you think of local news as an ecosystem, newspapers are still providing over 60% of original reporting at the local level. So when you lose newspapers, you know, whether they're print or digital, you're leaving millions of Americans without trusted sources of local information.
When we think about what is currently happening, are local businesses, say, buying ads, you know, in the online or even print edition of their local paper, or are they holding back right now as well?
Even though ad revenue is already in decline, there are still, of course, it's still a major part of how newspapers and other news outlets make their money. And so a lot of businesses are struggling themselves because they've either had to shut down or, you know, put a hold on things so that they're not spending money on advertising the way they used to. A lot of businesses have actually said that they don't want their ads to appear next to anything related to the pandemic or to death or to destruction, right? Most stories right now on the news out of necessity are about this crisis. So they don't want, you know, their ads to appear in that way. And then on top of that, you know, we were really impressed at the degree to which local news outlets have been attempting in the last 15 years to innovate and adapt their way out of this collapsing business model. So they've been finding new revenue streams like events, like reader revenue. All of those things are now threatened across the board. So even the outlets that have done the very best job diversifying their revenue streams are faced with really severe economic impact.
Well, I'm also curious, you know, we've been talking about local organizations. But journalism, of course, is also filled with freelance workers who work outside the protection of, you know, an employee-employer relationship, but often file copy or file radio spots for the organizations that you're mentioning. Kristen, what do we know about what's happening to freelancers?
I think we should assume that it's 10 times worse or more than what local newsrooms are dealing with, that people who, you know, have relationships with local newsrooms who count on them to pay their invoices on time. I have seen, you know, tweets from journalists reporting that they won't be getting paid for work that they've already done because of the way the pay schedule works. These people are part of an ecosystem. And when that ecosystem collapses, it hurts everyone, including freelancers.
Are we seeing impacts maybe on the quality of coverage? If, say, you've only got a few reporters who are being forced in as much as they can to work from home, are local audiences getting the kind of high quality news that could help them make decisions in a really scary time?
The short answer is it would be impossible for local news outlets to be in the financial state that they're in right now and not have it impact the kind of coverage. We have been enormously touched and impressed by the degree to which local outlets across the country have risen to the challenge. But the problem is that we already know that before this crisis hit, there have been study after study that shows that when local journalism declines, government costs go up, government corruption increases, local officials conduct themselves with less integrity and efficiency. We know that civic engagement is deeply impacted by local journalism, so fewer people go out to vote and they don't know what their candidate is or what the platform that their candidate stands for. When you lose local journalism, it impacts communities and democracies in really serious, significant ways. And so you can imagine that if this process has suddenly been accelerated in the last month, at exactly the moment when we most urgently need local news, there's going to be an impact on coverage. It's impossible for there not to be.
Kristen, I want to dig into this dichotomy a little bit of, you know, newsrooms on a national level doing relatively well, the New York Times being a great example, and the polling that shows the majority of Americans approve of the media's job right now. And yet, people saying, oh, I hit a paywall on my local news site, or, oh, I don't subscribe to, you know, the newspaper in my city. Is there a way to bridge that gap and motivate people to support local outlets now?
I think we're starting to see that now. There are a number of funds out there, people raising money for laid off and furloughed journalists. But along with that trust that people say, there was a report, I think it was last year from Pew, that said 71% of people thought that local news was doing well financially. Mm-hmm. The dichotomy is that national newsrooms, particularly the New York Times, the Washington Post, have figured out how to switch their business model over to ask to get paid for what they produce. And what we're seeing more and more is local newsrooms making the case that we're bringing you something of value and that you should pay for it. And, you know, setting up paywalls that are dynamic that say, okay, you, this kind of reader will read three pieces before they have an opportunity to subscribe. But the other trick to this, and I see this as the biggest problem for really small, independently owned places, even those that are online only and have existed in the last 10 years, is we have to get the technology right. We have more sophisticated news consumers than we ever have before, thanks to our tech giants, right, who have made everything really easy to use. So if you're a news consumer and you want to open up your local news site to read a story and you're hit with wonky ads that don't open and pop-up videos, you're going to flip off really quickly. So we have to make the product is worth paying for. The news itself is worth paying for. We have to make platforms for our consumers that are also worth paying for.
I mean, one thing that happens when you have, you know, paywalls up everywhere is the fracturing of the media landscape, so that people suddenly now have to go to 10 different places and pay 10 different fees in order to try to access different kinds of reporting. A lot of local news outlets in the last few weeks have actually put down temporarily lowered their paywalls for coronavirus coverage because they want to do the right thing. But that raises the issue that if, you know, all journalism, if you have to pay for all journalism, that's going to leave folks who are in financial straits or who are poor or marginalized in some way out in the cold. And so I do think it's worth us, you know, we've been making the case at Penn for the last year, and so have many others, that local journalism is a public good. It is a service that is so vital to society that it's worth more than the kind of ticket price, right, or the amount that people have to pay for it, that it has larger impact and larger benefits for society.
Victoria, one thing I wanted to have you elaborate on is this call for potentially federal funds. to support journalism right now. Can you elaborate what PEN, your organization, is asking for and whether that poses any weird ethical dilemmas? After all, you know, we all report on government all the time.
Despite the fact that they may receive some funding from the government as well as funding from other sources, I think it's really important to have some context there. First of all, the U.S. government has actually supported journalism in this country since it was founded in the form of postal subsidies, tax breaks, government ads, and from the 1960s onward through direct funding through the Corporation Public Broadcasting.
We are having this conversation on public radio after all, yes.
Exactly. But second of all, those countries that rank highest on press freedom indices around the world, democracies like Norway, Sweden, the Netherlands, and Belgium, are also have the highest rates of public funding for local journalism. So there are clearly ways that we can set these mechanisms up, which we already have done in this country, that protect editorial independence while providing funds. It's just a question of will and way. And I do think that point that Kristen made earlier, that 70% of the American public don't realize that local outlets are in trouble, I hope and I think that that is changing, that we are kind of in this moment where there's an awakening of the need to support local journalism.
Kristen, I'm going to give you the last word here. Are there any bright spots that you are watching right now where you think, yes, that model is going to help, or yes, this thing is going to work both in the pandemic and after?
It's the relationships that local newsrooms, regardless of what they look like, have built with their communities. So places like Berkeleyside, which raised $1 million in a direct public offering previously, you know, are able to reach out to their community and tell them what's happening and get support. I see here in Tampa Bay people speaking out in favor of the Tampa Bay Times. It's a fuzzy thing, but that relationship is what makes local journalism unlike anything else. And the beat reporters who can now work from home because they've had relationships with people and institutions are why we know what's happening in government and hospitals and schools and all of the things that impact our lives. So I'm hopeful that those relationships will be one of the key things that pulls us through. And one of the places that it matters most is with our communities, and that those communities understand we need them just as much as they need us.
Kristen Hare covers local news for the journalism nonprofit Pointer, and Victoria Vilk is Program Director of Digital Safety and Free Expression at PEN America. Thank you both for your time.
Thank you so much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.